It's the Afternoon Cruise, and I'm chatting with Dr. Andy Fleeser, a gifted pianist, teacher, and music director, and he's with Schmidt Music as the keyboard manager. Andy, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Now, today is World Piano Day, so of course I wanted to connect with someone who knows the instrument and loves the instrument, and you're both of those things, and we're at Schmidt Music hanging out by a piano as we speak. If that comes up, we got these 88 keys ready. But honestly, thanks to Schmidt Music for inviting us over and supporting World Piano Day on Jazz 88.
Glad to have you here. Thanks so much.
Okay, piano, as you know, is something that a lot of folks kind of get strong-armed into. Like, this is your first instrument you got to learn. Your grandma's paying for it, and you sort of wince and go, oh, okay. And then in fifth grade, you go, I'm playing the snare drum or I'm playing the saxophone. But of course, there's thousands upon thousands, millions of people who get introduced to the piano and stay with it, such as yourself. So what do you love about this instrument, and why didn't you rebel and join me in the bass room?
Yeah, I was the weird, well, I, you know what, you know, funny story is I did play bass too, but I gave it up so I could focus on piano. The thing is, I wasn't one of those kids who got strong-armed into piano, but we had one in the house, and when I was 4 years old, I started teaching myself little melodies. And then I begged my parents for lessons, and finally, when I was six, they gave them to me. So I was the kid who just wanted to keep playing, and I kept going back to it. I'm not exactly sure what it is I like about it, because it's always been a part of my life.
Yeah.
But there's nothing to me like sitting down at this instrument and either playing the music that's in front of me or playing the music that's inside my head. It just gives me great joy, and it feels amazing to do so.
Andy, when you first got those piano lessons at age six, what was like the first thing your piano teacher sort of tried to put in front of you? You've been sort of freelancing since age three or four, going, mm-hmm. Oh, I got some melodies. What did they sort of go, okay, here's how you start learning this instrument?
The staff, middle C, the G above, the F below. They gave me both staves at once. So day one, reading music, just white keys only at the time, but learning the musical alphabet, knowing every C, every F, every G, whatever, just geography, and just we went into music learning right away, music reading, I mean to say.
It seems that piano is sort of the musician's notepad, whether it's the instrument that somebody specializes or not. I'm not a world-class piano player. It's still what I write on. That's true mm-hmm. for a lot of people. On top of that, it seems to me to be one of the most linear instruments
mm-hmm.
and one of the ones where when you learn how to play it, you almost naturally learn music theory in a way that's a little different than the guitar, than the bass, than the drums, and other things like that. Why do you think it is such a common instrument for writing and for learning music theory?
Well, one, what you see is what you get. Each key plays exactly one note. There aren't different ways to voice it. There aren't, you know, different frets on the guitar. There aren't different ways to voice the chord. You just play it that way. And so it's really easy for people who don't really know how to play piano to kind of know how to play piano. The other big thing is polyphony, multiple notes at once. Now you can do that on a guitar, and you can do that, you can do double stops on a violin, that sort of thing. But in terms of like real polyphony, you've got 10 fingers, you got 10 notes at your disposal at all times. So you can play any chord you want, any harmony you want. One hand can play the harmony, the other hand can play the melody. And you know, if you're sitting there writing music, trying things out, you don't have to know how to play the instrument. You don't have to know how to play a flute. You know, you can just like, you can at least get the melody out on the piano. Also, there's a really sweet like writing surface.
Fair enough. Yeah, there's always a little spot to grab a pen and write things down. Now, because it's such a workhorse and such this vital thing to navigate, I want to talk a little bit about the romance of it, because I don't think you've spent your life dedicated to a notebook or to utility. You spent your life dedicated to an instrument that's beautiful and, mm-hmm. and that you believe can really communicate a lot. Tell me about the non-workhorse side of the piano, the beauty of the instrument.
It can be so much of what you want it to be. Pianos are so coloristic. You get to play around with just different sounds of, you know, if we want, you know. you know, if we want nice, strong staccato, that sort of thing, or if I want to really smooth, or, you know, really just, you know, we can go soft, we can go loud, we can go short, we can go long. It's just, and just the fact is that I've got such a range at my disposal. I can play super high, I can play super low, I can do both. It's just giving me everything I need.
Let's talk about, I'm a big yin and yang guy. We find the positive, we find the negative. Mm-hmm. So with a canvas that wide open, mm-hmm. that creates its own struggles. So when you're working as a pianist yourself, or when you're working especially as an accompanist, mm-hmm. how do you make sure to use the right amount of the canvas, to leave the right amount open for the vocalist, for the other players, whatever it may be? You got a piano. I'm a bass player, man. Mm-hmm. It can be very threatening when you go, I got everything you got. My left hand is your full job. How do you make sure to keep the canvas, to use the right amount of the canvas?
Right. Well, you know, if you're with a singer, you know, if I'm playing something that a composer has written for a singer, usually a good composer is going to get the piano out of the way, yeah, so they don't fight each other. But if they give me a chart, you know, if I'm just playing for someone, I have to make sure I'm not doubling the melody, you know, like that's not helpful to anyone, because that's not giving the singer any freedom. And I also have to make sure I stay out of their range. So if it's an alto and she's singing up in this range, I'm gonna, you know, stay to
make a little space.
Below and above, right? That sort of thing. I just have to consider the range of the instrument I'm working with and how I can stay out of that instrument's way.
You're the keyboard manager at Schmidt Music. That probably means you've interacted with a lot of different instruments. Mm-hmm. I have a couple like, oh, I'm talking to an expert on piano type of questions. Mm-hmm. So some of them are, I've kind of always known what the far pedal, the left pedal and the right, mm-hmm, pedal do. Mm-hmm. One makes it sustain, one makes it kind of quieter. I don't know. What do these three pedals do that are on most pianos?
Okay, most people are, like you said, are familiar mostly with the right pedal. It's the sustain pedal. They also call it the damper pedal. So usually if I'm going to play a note and I let go, it stops.
Yep.
Right? If I put the damper pedal down, I can play as much as I want, and it's going to hold all of these notes down. Not forever. They're going to naturally decay. It's an acoustic instrument, and they're being struck. But it's holding things, as opposed to me just pressing the key and being staccato. The leftmost pedal, then, as you said, we call that the una corda pedal, which just means one string. So generally, if you look inside a piano, the hammer is usually hitting three strings at once. If I play middle C, I'm hitting three strings at once, all tuned in unison to middle C, right? And so, and if I'm down here, maybe it's two strings. If I'm way down here, it's just one string. But for the most part, what it's doing is it's shifting the entire keyboard over to the right. You see a little motion there, and that's moving all of the hammers over. So now instead of hitting three strings at a time, they're gonna hit one or two. So you get a little less power, and it's, you know, it can be softer, but the overall vibe is that it's mellower.
And I knew none of that.
That's how that works. And then the middle pedal, now it's different on an upright piano. We're on a grand piano, radio audience, so imagine that. Big grand piano. So then, middle pedal is called the sostenuto pedal, and this is the one that's the mystery to most people, which is it works like the sustain pedal, but it's only going to sustain the notes that you tell it to. Sometimes I refer to it as the memory pedal, because, so I'm going to put down C, E, and G, then I'm going to put down the pedal. It's going to keep those down, but the notes outside of it aren't going to be staccato. So I could just kind of, and then it's just going to hold those three down. Why on earth would we need that? The main reason we use it, and it's not the only reason, but often we use it to sustain bass. And I can keep things nice and clean up here, but I can keep that bass sustained.
I'm getting my mind blown by Dr. Andy Fleeser, keyboard manager at Schmidt Music and a really gifted pianist, music director, and more. How is that notated? sostenuto?
Usually you'll just see like, you know, a pedal marking is usually just like a horizontal line underneath the notes, and then they'll just mark sostenuto, S-O-S-T, something like that.
Got it. Okay, my next sort of, hey, I'm finally talking to a piano expert question. Sometimes y'all will be in the percussion department at colleges, and it seems like not only a weird musical fit, to be frank, a weird cultural fit. Look at all these pianists hanging out with the, you know, marimba players and the snare players. But you talk to somebody and they'll really go, no, this is a percussion instrument. Make that argument for me as somebody who's reluctant. Or tell me you agree with me.
Well, you know, the case for it being a percussion instrument is you hit strings with hammers.
Okay.
Same thing as a marimba. You hit a keyboard, same arrangement on it, on vibes, marimba, xylophone, that sort of thing. You hit some sort of thing with some sort of striking implement, right? And so in this case, this kind of works, but you know, some people are like, well, maybe it's a string instrument. Well, I feel like on a string instrument, you know, you could bow, sort of that sort of thing. You can change. It's, I don't know. For me, it's the fact that hammers are hitting the strings make it a percussion instrument. Now, I'm not even crazy about calling it a percussion instrument. Okay. I kind of call it a keyboard instrument. I put it in the same ranks as like organ, that sort of thing. Yeah. I know the sound is produced in entirely different ways, but because you're playing a collection of white and black keys with your fingers, that's my hot take.
Okay, I like this. I'm hanging out at Schmidt Music with Andy Fleeser, and Andy, I walked past probably 45 pianos on my way to get to this particular room we're in. My question for you is, at a moment where you can dial up a piano sound on your phone, there's still a want, there's still clearly a market for acoustic pianos. What do you think makes this an important part of the current musical landscape?
There's something being in a room with an acoustic piano that you cannot duplicate. It's just, there's something about the hammer striking the string attached to a soundboard, which is a big old piece of spruce inside the piano that resonates, right? You could say the same thing with, you can dial up a violin sound, you can dial up a guitar sound, that sort of thing. But there's something about the magic of the strings and the wood and the metal and everything working together where the sound just floats through the air. And it's just, you can't duplicate that.
I agree. It's also not always that hard to A and B it blind. Like if you're in a studio and goes, which one do you think is the real piano? You can usually go, this one's the real piano. Mm-hmm, there's mm-hmm. something to it.
And like, look, I dial up piano sounds all the time at home. But, you know, but then, you know, when I really want to play the piano, I play the piano.
Yeah. I've been chatting with Andy Fleeser on World Piano Day. And I think we've covered a lot of what I was excited about covering. But as somebody who's been so intimately involved with this piano and this instrument, both as a player and now as somebody who sells them and somebody who has taught a lot and taught me, man. I took music theory from you. and I think I got a proud B minus C plus. And
oh, man. No, you were like a good B plus.
All right. I learned a lot. So my question for you is, as your career is so intimately connected to this instrument on World Piano Day, what am I missing about the instrument, or what do you want to say about this instrument?
What can't it do? Well, no, I mean, there's plenty of things it can't do. You know, yeah. it's a piano. But for me, it's like, sit down, when, you know, just think about the last time you sat down. Even if you took like 2 years of lessons when you were eight, right? When's the last time you just sat down and played a little thing and realized how fun it is to sit down and just create the sound. Just create that pure, beautiful, natural sound. And it's just coming from your fingertips.
You stumbled on something, so now I'm going to ask one more question. You said, what can't it do?
Yeah.
No. And I'm not going to ask you what can't it do, but the jazz music so benefits from bent notes. Jazz music so mm-hmm. benefits from passing notes, which is very possible to do on piano. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the greatest jazz thinkers. I think about Barry Harris. I think about Mary Lou Williams. I think about Duke Ellington. These people who create new ways to relate to chords, to scales, and things like that. It came from this instrument that is uniquely disqualified to bend, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so my question is, I mean, the piano looms very large in the music of jazz, and it sometimes seems ill-suited to one of the most important parts of jazz, which is these blue notes and these you know, passing, where you're going, you know, beyond just the chromatic scale, but into the nooks and crannies in between. So why do you think, I mean, why do you think piano is such a fit for jazz when it can't do this very important part of the music?
I think what we're doing is we're providing a solid, for lack of a better term, bass, right? A solid tonal bass, you know, something for everyone else to play around,
gotcha.
Right? We're the ones who are providing, you know, all the extensions, right? We're the ones who are, you know, we're not hanging out here. We're hanging out here, right? And so we're at least going to provide that structure, that architecture, and then that allows the rest of you to bend your faces off.
Dean Sorensen from the University of Minnesota always said, you have to syncopate off of something else. You have to have something to sort of decorate upon. So maybe mm-hmm. it's that foundational side
yeah.
of things. So, Andy Fleisser, it has been a joy to be with you today, to be celebrating World Piano Day. And as somebody who's a really great ambassador for this instrument and for music, thank you for what you do, thank you for what you've chosen to do for your career, and thank you for spending a part of today with Jazz 88.
Thanks, Sean. Thanks for coming to Schmidt.